Richard Findlay here. Recently, I had a conversation with journalist Ariel Bogle on the world of Australia's conspiracy theorists, people who've come to believe that there are microchips in vaccines and that the world is controlled by secret people meeting in a secret room somewhere.
Stood up in Senate estimates, declared that he had a list of 28 prominent pedophiles. Could be the list that cracks open an immense cover-up, or it could be nothing at all.
You can search for my conversation with Ariel Bogle on the ABC Listen app.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Just a warning before we get started. This episode contains references to suicide and covers some dark material. We'll leave some resources in the show notes.
People saying, oh, you've got a healthy, happy baby. You should feel happy.
I was just like, what is wrong with me that I don't have that connection to my baby? Like, I should love my baby.
PNDE, so perinatal depression and anxiety, is such a period of intensity and can be such a period of challenge like no other. But we get to see recovery, and I think that's something really special.
I felt so ashamed that I felt that way, and I felt like I couldn't tell people. If I had of spoken more to friends and mother's group and other people, I probably would have felt less alone.
Imagine holding your newborn baby in your arms. This red-faced, tiny, doll-sized human. And you feel awful. Full of resentment, trapped and overwhelmed. Everyone's congratulating you, but you feel empty and numb. We're told this is supposed to be the sweetest, most loved-up time of your life. But being a new mum isn't all delicious-smelling babies and soup dropped over by loved ones. There's acreage of interrupted sleep, feeling out of your depth, the sense that you're drowning, terrible social isolation, and feeling like a miserable failure. For many of us, these feelings are connected to perinatal depression and anxiety, or PNDA. PNDA affects 1 in 5 women in Australia. 1 in 5, meaning there's every chance that a close friend is affected, a workmate, a family member, and at least one of the ladies at your gym. So what is it like, at the moment of this huge life event, to be at rock bottom? And how can you, even in a sleep-deprived fog, make it through to the other side? I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about perinatal depression and anxiety.
We were driving home. She screamed the whole way home. And I remember thinking, I felt sorry for her that I was her mum.
This is Molly. She's 31. And after she had her daughter a year and a half ago, Molly struggled with the demands of a newborn baby.
I think I just felt a lot of guilt and shame, as well as the sadness.
These feelings were a shock for Molly because she knew she wanted a baby from the time that she was a kid herself.
So I was 10 when my sister was born, and she was like a little child to me. I loved walking her around. I loved changing her. I really looked forward to being able to experience it, not as a sibling, but as a mum.
When COVID-19 hit, Molly was in her late 20s. She was exposed to the tragedy of the pandemic and locked down in Melbourne. Feeling heavy, burnt out, and unable to find motivation, Molly was diagnosed with treatment-resistant depression.
I described it to my husband as, imagine if every single person in your life died, how sad you would be. That's how I felt all the time. And just this heaviness, and like there was no joy in anything ever.
It was a bit of a mission, but after some trial and error, Molly finally found the right medication and therapy. By 2023, she was in a good place and on holiday with her husband.
Got pregnant in Europe, which is, I guess, some people do when you're having a good time.
Molly loved being pregnant. Her mental health was stable, she was looking forward to being a parent, and her body felt as good as it can during pregnancy. Until she went into labour.
My epidural didn't work properly, so I could still feel a fair amount of pain. And then they pretty much said, you're going to have an emergency cesarean.
In the end, Molly's medical team was able to use vacuum extraction to get the baby out safely.
So she was born, and then I just started profusely vomiting. So I was very sick for a couple of hours after birth. So I didn't have that nice bonding time of breastfeeding and cuddling the baby.
The baby was taken to the nursery, and Molly lay in bed panicking and ruminating over how she was responsible for the birth going tits up. The next morning, when she was given her daughter to hold, her mind was still reeling.
I was more relieved that she was there and she was alive and okay, but I didn't feel that love. I felt more just protectiveness over her. I did not feel a bond with her. I didn't feel the rush of love that they say that you feel when you give birth towards your child. And then I felt guilty about that.
On day three, still in hospital, Molly woke up feeling utterly distraught.
And I just felt that heaviness like I'd had before with depression, and I was crying and I felt really upset. And I knew that you have the day three baby blues, but it felt really bad. Like it felt like it did last time, the last time that I had depression. And I remember just laying there with the baby next to me, just crying, being like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this now.
Molly's husband didn't have parental leave and returned to work when their baby was just 4 days old. Her mum and sister had helped out early on, but Molly felt like she couldn't talk to them about what she was really feeling. She withdrew and sunk further into a depression.
I'm quite talkative and I just wasn't really talking at all. I was just kind of sitting there. I didn't really want to eat.
Oh.
Yeah, I definitely felt isolated just in general. And also when people would reach out, they'd be like, are you loving it? And it's really hard to just say, yeah, it's great, even though it's not great, because you're not really going to tell people the truth because that's not what they're expecting to hear.
The difficulty within the perinatal period is that shame piece, the shame around motherhood and being a good enough mother and feeling like you can share early on when things are going badly wrong.
This soothing Glaswegian voice belongs to Dr. Erin Seto. She's a clinical psychologist and a director at the Gidget Foundation, a mental health service for new and expecting parents. Dr. Erin looks for specific signs when she's assessing a woman for PNDA.
So I guess anxiety, you're looking at more worries, more ruminative thoughts, potentially feeling a bit more agitated, finding changes in sleep patterns. So it might be difficulties falling asleep or it might be difficulties staying asleep. And what's important to think about with that is it's in the absence of what the baby's doing. This is purely about you.
Okay.
For depression, we're looking at more things like withdrawing from society, not wanting to engage with family and trusted friends, maybe being more irritable more often and potentially having low moods as well.
PNDA can be diagnosed surprisingly early, from preconception, which is when you're first trying to get pregnant, up until when the baby is 1 year old. What health professionals like Dr. Erin look for is something that is more severe than the baby blues.
So the baby blues is common. Normally, it will resolve with reassurance from friends, family, medical practitioners, and nothing comes of it.
It might last up to 2 weeks. Beyond that, you're then looking at PNDA. Dr. Erin says there are some key things that make a woman more susceptible to perinatal depression and anxiety.
Having a family history of mental health is a key risk factor, particularly bipolar or psychosis. Other things like financial stress, housing instability can increase vulnerability to mental health issues as well. Mm. We know that where people have been more susceptible to hormonal changes over time, that can become a period of difficulty for them as hormones change significantly during the antenatal and through into postnatal period as well.
So there's big stresses you'll know about and you can predict before the baby comes along, your mental health history, financial stress, hormone sensitivity. And then there's things that you can't control. Domestic violence, fertility treatment, and unsupportive workplaces are just some of the other risk factors for women. Having a traumatic birth, like Molly did, can also make you more likely to develop PNDA.
Up to 1 in 3 are reporting traumatic births. A big factor within mental health is what you hoped to get from the birth and then the reality of the birth, and the disconnect between those two increases vulnerability.
Your birth doesn't have to be medically catastrophic to be traumatic. You can have a totally standard birth and be scarred by the experience. Erin says one of the more upsetting and unexpected things new mums can experience are thoughts about hurting their child.
So over 70%, according to the research, of new and expectant parents will experience intrusive thoughts, and up to 50% of them within the research suggest that it's harm to baby that those intrusive thoughts are focused around. I guess the key factor for us as psychologists is looking at what's the level of distress that this is causing, because I think distress shows that this doesn't fit with who you are normally.
It can be really scary to tell people your mind is going to these places. But intrusive thoughts, according to Dr. Erin, are a sign that you're overwhelmed and can be your tired brain's way of alerting you to risk. Intrusive thoughts usually shock you like a jump scare. Your brain is notifying you to potential hazards, the bath, the traffic, the stairs, when those uninvited thoughts come into your mind.
It's almost like a prompt to plan. Have you thought about what you're going to do in terms of safety of carrying a baby down the stairs? So it's an unhelpful coping strategy, but it's a common one.
Is there a time when they should worry that they're having these thoughts?
If someone's having an intrusive thought around hurting their baby, but then they're responding to their baby's needs in every way, you're not as worried about that person. If we're seeing someone who's quite silent and shut down, but they're kind of saying, yeah, I feel fine, right, we're going to be more worried about those sorts of presentations. So we look at physically, how are you going? What are you telling us? I also say, what are you not telling us in the story?
In the worst case scenario, perinatal depression and anxiety can lead to suicide.
We know that it's still one of the leading causes of maternal mortality during this period, which is quite significant.
Erin sees a lot of women being extremely self-critical when they're not coping and they need help.
I think that can be a really difficult time for women, and women will often report feeling like failures when actually help seeking is a sign of resilience.
Hurting my baby was one of the biggest ones that still kind of freaks me out. Like, I can't believe I was having those thoughts.
This is Elena. She's 30 years old and works in childcare on the central coast of New South Wales, where she lives with her partner and 7-month-old son. 10 weeks after Elena gave birth to her baby boy, she found herself at an all-time low.
I was having this mental breakdown, calling my partner saying, you need to come home. Like, I was sitting in the bath with my child and I was just like, what if I just let you go right now? Like, you know, what happens if my partner came home and I've drowned myself and then the baby's drowned too? That was really scary.
Elena was diagnosed with premenstrual dysphoric disorder, or PMDD, when she was 28. It means she gets severe PMS symptoms and her mental health is significantly affected by hormonal changes. She's had bouts of PMDD where it felt dangerous.
My moods were really full on. I was very suicidal. I couldn't go to work, quitting jobs, breaking up with my partner. I couldn't live with anyone else. It was a bit of a roller coaster.
A year later, Elena was still dealing with PMDD symptoms, but they were manageable. She was taking antidepressants and was keen to start a family.
I've always worked with babies and I thought, you know, I'm so ready. I've got this in the bag.
Elena fell pregnant quickly, but the reality of looking after her own baby was vastly different from minding other people's children.
I'd wanted this for so long, like I wanted it for years, and then I was resentful of it. So then it made me really sad. I was like, why do I feel this way? Like, I should feel happy. And I think the pressure of, you know, people saying, oh, you've got a healthy, happy baby, you should feel happy, that also gets to you as well, because it's like forceful emotions.
Elena didn't initially bond with her son, and left alone with him, he was a challenge.
You should hear the scream on this kid, like he could break glasses. But he would scream when you put him in the car seat, scream when you put him in the pram, scream when you put him down, like he was just attached to you like Velcro.
Elena's experience with a newborn was far from what she'd imagined or what she'd been led to believe.
It was not like what, you know, you see on TikTok or social media that's like, oh, like the love comes rushing through and, you know, you just love this baby.
Okay, so you didn't have that surge of love?
No, not initially.
And were you concerned about that?
Maybe just like, what the fuck? Like, why doesn't it, like, am I supposed to feel this way? Like, it was just a bit confusing.
At home all day with baby, Elena felt alone and untethered, and she started to resent her partner.
There was times where he'd come home and he's like, oh, I just need to have a quick shower. And I would just lose it at him. I was like, you need to have a fucking shower. Like, how dare you? Like, I would just want him to come home and take the baby straight away.
Yeah, right. Well, having a shower is a luxury if you can't put a baby down.
It fully is. Like, there would be times where I needed to prioritize eating and my partner's going, why isn't the washing done? I'm like, are you fucking joking? Like, spend a day at home with this baby and then you'll understand why the washing's not done.
To Elena, it felt like she and her partner were living in two very different realities.
The anxiety was my life changing so much and he's not changing at all, and he just didn't really understand that. So that was where a lot of my anxiety was stemming from.
Elena didn't feel like she had a moment to herself. If she just put her baby down for a second, he would scream. After a particularly bad week where the two of them didn't leave the house at all, she took her son to a healthcare centre to see if something was wrong. But it wasn't the baby the staff were worried about.
The nurse kind of took one look at me and she said, are you okay? She's like, you seem like you're really struggling. So she scheduled an emergency psychiatric appointment with me. So I saw a psychiatrist that day to do like an intake session.
Elena was grateful to be referred, but the psychiatrist wasn't much help to her in that moment.
I still had this crying, screaming baby, you know, with me constantly. Don't have family around. My partner's in Sydney working 12 hours a day. I couldn't get a break.
Elena was still struggling, but help was on its way. We'll check back in with Elena soon, but for now, I want to bring you back to Molly, our new mum from Melbourne.
I think I just started crying and saying that I feel really terrible and I don't know what to do and I know I probably shouldn't feel this way.
In the first week after her daughter was born, Molly shared how she was feeling with a community midwife who immediately put her on a wait list for psychological support. But that meant a six-month wait. Meanwhile, Molly was desperately trying to bond with her daughter.
I would try and sing to her and then I would cry because when I would sing to her, I still wouldn't feel anything. But I'm trying to look at this little baby and, you know, try and bond with her, and I just couldn't.
She was worried that her deadness inside was transmitting to her baby.
Am I going to screw her up because I don't have that connection to her? Like, does she realise that?
While on the waitlist for psychological care, Molly happened to have her 12 weeks postpartum appointment with her obstetrician, who saw how much she was struggling and fast-tracked her to a psychologist's office. There, she was able to share thoughts that she'd been previously too embarrassed to say out loud.
So I was just like, what is wrong with me that I don't have that connection to my baby? Like, I should love my baby. That's what mums do. I almost feel like I love my pets more than I love my baby, so it shouldn't be that way.
The psychologist had Molly bring her daughter to some of the appointments and would watch how mum and baby were interacting.
And then she could reassure me by saying, look at the way she responds to you and the way she looks at you, like you have a really good bond. So that helped me kind of get better over time.
Some validation.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone attaches at different times to their babies for different reasons and in different ways.
This is psychologist Dr. Erin Seto again. She says there's a lot of guilt and shame around not feeling that rush of love for your baby that you think you should. But she says you can't force the feelings.
Take your time, get to know your baby. It might happen later on when they're weaning, then when you just realise that you're laughing and having a good time as they squish avocado into their face.
Dr. Erin often advises parents who don't feel the Hollywood surge of euphoria towards their baby to be like an actor and go through the motions first.
So even if you don't feel like you're getting that draw, you might be doing wonders for your baby, you're just not recognising it.
Like Molly, who sang to her baby anyway, even though her heart wasn't in it at the time. It helps.
something really lovely that we get to do is when we're in sessions with women and they'll say, I don't feel that bond. You'll see the baby's eyes move and look at mum. And in that instant, you're able to point out, well, the baby is actually very attached to you. It moved when it heard your voice in the room. It doesn't move the same way when it hears my voice. I do often say to parents, new parents, you're not meant to love every single aspect of parenthood. Like, it's going to be challenging, and different people have those challenges at different points.
Dr. Erin says there are practical ways for us to step up and support a new mum. Sometimes it's the simple act of giving her a few minutes of peace.
I think we often make assumptions that, like, making dinner would be helpful, so I'll go make dinner. But actually, what would be really helpful is if you could just hand the baby over when your partner gets home from work and go for a walk around the block.
And remembering that before you were busy keeping this tiny human alive, you were, like, in love and stuff.
I think also we forget that we are a couple first before we became parents. So what does that look like? How are we continuing to nurture the couple relationship?
Even if you're tired and there's 100 things on the to-do list, is there a moment when you can sit with your partner and talk about the best and worst part of your day for 5 minutes? And if your partner's away all the time or you don't have a partner, can you lean on the people in your corner?
Having support networks there, having family and friends there to pick up the emotional kind of catching you when you feel like you're falling.
I found a real shocker for me was having the babies and then I'm not at work anymore and I felt completely lost without this focus. How do women compensate for that huge absence in their lives, particularly when they love their work or they really identify with their work and they get their self-esteem?
It is a challenge. You think about your work colleagues and you think they spend every single day with you. Often they know how you tick. They know what will be a trigger. They know what you'll enjoy. You have this shared sense of humour with them. And then all of a sudden you lose that. Mm. Sometimes it's about having a bit of planning for that.
Yes, and even though you're busy planning for a baby, Erin says there's planning to do to set yourself up for the best chance of coping once you're sleep deprived and you have that tiny bub. Structure, activities, days where someone pops over to take the baby for a sec, all of it helps.
It can be really difficult dealing with the mental load to come up with things yourself. So sometimes suggesting if you've had a family, you probably will know what was helpful and what was unhelpful.
Watching the baby while mum has a shower, that's valuable, folks. Doing the dishes while she has a sleep, brilliant. Getting through some of the piles of laundry, 10 points. And while you're at it, maybe suss out if there are any changes to mama's mood. In most PNDA cases, women get better. And Dr. Erin sees that happen in front of her eyes.
I think the perinatal period is such a period of intensity and can be such a period of challenge like no other. But we get to see recovery for the majority of people.
Do you get to see in your work that period when women fall in love with their babies for the first time?
Yeah, we do. It's really beautiful. And it takes so many different forms as well. Like, for some people, it is about the acts of service. It's the making sure they're always wrapped up well for the weather, or it's the engaging in the play. I think that's why I feel so reassured that it comes for everyone. It just comes in different forms and different ways at different times.
6 months after having her baby, Molly was in the Philippines and on a boat.
We did like an island hopping day and we took her on the different boats and she smiled and was waving to everyone and she seemed to really enjoy herself. And I remember being really proud and happy that we were here and she was doing so well. I kind of thought, oh, well, I've contributed to that. Like, I have helped her be that way.
Molly, what was it like to fall in love with your baby after all you went through?
It was amazing. She's 16 months old, so we're almost a year past that time. I love her so much now. And I think getting to that stage, I realise, oh, this is what everyone's been talking about. I'm now pregnant with our second baby, so.
What?
Yeah, I had my 13-week scan today.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Everything's all good.
So what are you doing to prepare and how are you feeling about it all?
I've already told my obstetrician that I have this history and I have access to the psychologist if I need to.
Molly feels better equipped to deal with PNDA if it comes her way again. And she's also pretty keen to get rid of that stigma.
I just wish that it wasn't as shameful. If I had have spoken more to friends and mothers group and other people, I probably would have felt less alone. And I just wish that people realize that it's not your fault. It does get better, as everyone told me back then as well. Mm. It obviously does, because I'm going back for a second one.
Back to our friend Elena. After the emergency psychiatrist appointment left her without many answers, she eventually started working with a social worker and a psychologist. Now she was addressing her emotional and practical needs.
And then it started to get better, even just talking about it. And then the couples counselling, really, that was like the nail on the head. Okay, yeah, we're getting somewhere.
Elena, was there a turning point for you where you started to feel better?
Yeah, the turning point, definitely going back to work for me.
Mm.
I just needed that social connection. In my interview, I said, honestly, I just am coming to work for a break from my child.
Elena also rediscovered a social life outside, tending to her baby. Enter Girls Night with the Mums and No Babies.
It made me feel a bit of my identity again. And I felt like myself a bit again. Like I got to go out and dance, and I got to go and speak to people that, you know, wasn't about mum things. I said to them, I was like, guys, that night changed my life.
What would you say to Elena 7.5 months ago, who was bringing her newborn baby home?
Don't be so hard on yourself, and just take each day as it comes. Like, there will be a tomorrow. The sun will rise again tomorrow.
There aren't many challenges bigger than raising a human baby, and there aren't many life changes more drastic than going from being child-free to suddenly becoming the primary carer of a tiny, cute, screaming baby. It still shocks me that they let you leave the hospital with the newborn baby, even though it's clear you have absolutely no idea what you're doing. Of course it's overwhelming. The relentlessness of the caring work, the hormones, the way your body has become unrecognisable, the repetitiveness, the boredom, oh, the drastic pay cut you probably took. It's a wonder any of us survive. PNDA can affect anyone, including those with no pre-existing mental health conditions and dads and non-birthing mums. As we often say on this podcast, asking for help is one of the best things you can do for yourself. It's the ultimate survival skill. As Dr. Erin said, help seeking is a sign of resilience. So please ask for help if you feel like you need it. There are some resources in the show notes of this episode. This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gundungurra, Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies, We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt, produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman. Supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick, and our executive producer is Alex Lolbach. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.